Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does art have healing power? Many people share the gut feeling that exposure to works of creativity can be beneficial to healthcare patients and staff. And now that there is a growing body of research to confirm those suspicions and to define the specific kinds of art that have the most positive effects, many hospitals and clinics are actively building and refining their collections. My guests today have worked to document the effects of art on patient outcomes, and they consult with health organizations looking to improve the experience for those who serve. Kathy Hathorn is CEO and Creative Director of American Art Resources. Upali Nanda is the organization's Director of Research. They're both in town to participate in the North Texas Business Council's For the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare. That takes place this afternoon at 5 at the Winspear Opera House. Upali, Kathy, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
So let's begin by talking about how you start to even quantify the effects of art on patient outcomes. I guess it can start with something as simple as sending out a survey to people who have just left the hospital.
True. And that's what is most fascinating about this area of research, is that you're dealing with something which is very touchy-feely, mm-hmm. and yet it has such a powerful impact that it can be measured. So at the very base level, yes, you can do surveys, you can get feedback from people, you can ask them what they like and how it makes them feel. But there have been fascinating studies, and we've done some of those studies, which show impact, measurable impact on health outcomes, like stress measured by changes in blood pressure, or anxiety, or pain perception. So that's what makes it so fascinating as an area of research, that you are seeing the impact in measurable terms, and to an extent, terms that can even be translated into dollar amounts. So it's taking something that is very subjective, but finding a very objective measure for it, because it has such a huge impact on perception.
And the dollar amounts are really interesting, because so many healthcare organizations these days are strapped for cash. But this turns out to be an investment in an art program, something that theoretically could affect the bottom line.
Absolutely. We have a research department within our firm called the Rett Center, which is dedicated to research, education, and design of healthcare spaces. And the focus of our research has been to look at, you know, how we can bring information to other healthcare developers, owners, in terms of justifying those dollars spent on art. We have, you know, been looking at this for many, many years now, and art in the healthcare environment has gone from a time where it basically did not exist, which was 25 or 30 years ago, up to a point where owners realize how important the art program is, and honestly would rather, you know, take other things out of the project before the art program. We did a very small study at a hospital over in East Alabama, and not our research department, but the hospital itself, calculated that they could realize the savings of nearly $30,000 by using the artwork that was appropriate for the patient type in those rooms. And that's pretty significant, considering that the room was probably only, 15 by 30 feet.
Hmm. I was really interested that patients, when they leave, can often remember a lot more about a specific work of art than they do about the room itself. And then I thought about my dentist's office, and I couldn't describe a lot of the equipment trays or the chair I sit in, but there's a picture of a butterfly that you look at while you're getting your teeth cleaned.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the interesting thing is, Chris, if I ask you to tell me about a hotel room that you stayed in at some wonderful resort 2 or 3 weeks ago, you couldn't tell me anything, because here's the difference. When you're in your dentist office, you're under, if you're like me, a whole lot of stress.
She's lovely, but yes.
And mine is as well. But when we find ourselves in those stressful environments, we really revert back, and research shows this, to using the more primitive part of our brains, that fight or flight part of the brain, and it's also the part of the brain that helps to form memories, especially long-term memories. So the experience in the dentist office, ironically, is one of those that I actually use at conference presentations. Everyone knows what the art is in their dentist office.
So, you know, Upali Kathy says we're using the primitive part of our brains. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it turns out when you look at this and you try to quantify the art that really makes an impact, it is the art that that relates to scenes of nature that seems to be mm-hmm. most beneficial.
Yes, and that does go back to that quick evaluation that you make of the environment and of the image in front of you. That's what the survival mode is. So when you're looking at something, and a lot of times I use this analogy that your hospital brain is different from your museum brain.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it really is that you're thinking from different parts of your brain. When you're under high stress, it is that fight or flight mechanism that's kicking in. So it's the amygdala, it's the base level, the primal level brain that's reacting to it first. And that is why scenes of nature are so effective, because we have almost a hardwired connection to nature. It's something that's helped us evolve as a species. And that still kicks in. And there are a lot of studies that look at that quick response, almost a precognitive response to the environment and to images, particularly a lot of fMRI studies, neuroscience studies, that argue that you are reacting before you're thinking.
Hmm.
And that's what makes it very different, because when you're in a museum, you're doing the opposite.
Yeah,
you are thinking. You want to be provoked. You want to be challenged. You want to see something and then see it again differently after some time. But when you're in a hospital and you're stressed, you can't do that. You're thinking fight or flight. You're thinking, is this good for my survival or not? You're really thinking, is this going to make me okay? And that's where nature images become so beneficial. But again, it isn't all nature. It isn't like a blanket rule for nature. It really is something that connects with you and makes you feel better.
And unlike a lot of art, therefore, people's individual taste and what they might like outside the hospital, you know, people who would die to have a Mark Rothko in the living room, don't necessarily want
that. I would.
But they don't want that when they're in the hospital.
That's absolutely correct. And I think what Upali was just saying about the, you know, how our brain functions from the primitive brain, which basically tells us, are we going to survive, to the more complex brain that allows us to basically, scientists think now, have a conversation with ourselves as we stand in front of a very complex work of art or listen to a complex, you know, a Bartok work of art or a symphony. These are very different functions of the brain, and they're happening at very different times in our lives. I always tell people, you know, there's probably not a piece of art that I have in my home that I could ever put in a hospital. But then I probably wouldn't want to look at that art in a hospital either.
So hospitals have a challenge then in selecting the right works, because they might spend a lot of money and a lot of time and effort and, you know, make sure that everything is really fantastic. But the experience of the patients will depend on whether or not the works are appropriate.
That's absolutely correct. And not only do you have to look at research, I think that you also have to look at what we know anecdotally, because the research that all of us refer to as evidence-based design is basically only maybe barely 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with a landmark study that Dr. Roger Ulrich conducted in 1984, which basically showed that by analyzing 9 years' worth of patient discharge records, patients who had rooms that faced a park were actually discharged about a third of a day earlier than patients who were in a room that overlooked a brick wall. So, you know, these things have to be taken into account, but what tends to happen is it's not only this wonderful research that we have, but that research, like I said, has just scratched the surface. When you look anecdotally, I mean, I've been interested for 25 years in the needs of special patient populations. And, you know, I know it's always good for a laugh at a conference presentation when I say to people, you know, imagine a beautiful landscape painting of a mountain scene, and there's this great rushing brook, and, you know, you can just feel the cool water. But imagine that if it were in the urology clinic. So, you know,
the content matters a lot.
The content is highly important, and those are areas that have yet to be researched. There's practically no information on different types of patients.
You know, I read a bit of that study that said patients do better if they are facing a park scene than a brick wall. And I did have to wonder, as much as we're reading about this great representative art that shows scenes of nature, would it make more sense for hospitals to invest the capital they have for this sort of thing in creating landscape, you know, where it's visible to patients? Or does it make more sense to have art that you can sort of control fully?
Absolutely both. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a choice that hospitals make. Today, it's a norm to have windows. Everybody knows the power of windows. But this is an urban society we live in.
Yeah.
It's not always possible to have those healing views. And for a lot of times, what you're going to have is a window that's looking out into a parking lot or a roof of a different building, and you don't have a choice. And the power of art is that it can provide that portal. It can be your window not only into what's right outside, but into a whole different world. So thinking about it as a window is a great analogy. And you're kind of deciding between these two different kinds of windows, one that's real, but one that's in your perception created and framed as art.
So we know that hospitals are clearly very stressful for patients. They're stressful for the loved ones of those patients, but they're also stressful environments to work in. What do we know about the impact that art can have on staff retention and burnout and things like that?
Not nearly as much as we should.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a huge problem for hospitals. I was reading something the other day that it cost 1.5 times the average annual salary of a specialized nurse to replace that nurse once they leave.
Wow.
This whole country is facing a huge nursing shortage, physician shortage. The nursing staff is growing older, so it is one of the most pressing problems that everyone in healthcare today is saying, how are we going to face? You know, I can tell you, I love, Upali knows I have a million different stories, but one of my favorite examples to offer hospital owners, when a lot of times owners might say, well, you know, I just don't know if we can justify spending money for the staff and buying art for them. But my mother was an RN for 40 years, so I knew what she looked like when she came home mm-hmm. at 4 o'clock in the afternoon after dealing with that space.
Just worn out.
That environment, exhausted. So what we always recommend is if there's a way in those shared spaces, it is so important to try to, if nothing else, show the staff that they are being thought of and that their jobs are stressful, and that's being acknowledged. So, you know, owners are very cognizant of what that staff means to them and what it costs to lose them.
My guests are Kathy Hathorne, who is CEO and Creative Director of American Art Resources, and Upali Nanda, who's Director of Research for American Art Resources. They're in town to participate in a North Texas Business Council for the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare. That takes place this afternoon at the Winspear Opera House. You can find ticket information at ntbca.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe share an experience you've had with art while convalescing. We'd love to hear from you now. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Upali Nanda, who is Director of Research for American Art Resources, and Kathy Hathorn, who is CEO and Creative Director for the organization. They're in town to participate in a North Texas Business Council for the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare this afternoon at the Winspear Opera House. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Kathy, earlier you spoke about the importance of sort of context when you are looking at the content of a piece of art in a particular treatment space. There's also the question about where to place the work, because something that might make perfect sense for someone walking into a room from a standing position might not even be visible to someone who is wheeled in on a gurney or in a chair. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, that's always a challenge. And I think the answer lies in considering the users in that space who will be the most stressed, the most in need. You know, the classic example sometimes is even in waiting rooms where, in subways, where perhaps, you know, the picture would look so much nicer over the sofa or the seating, but yet you say, well, the patients then are sitting there looking at a blank wall.
Yeah.
So I think the optimum situation is to have two pieces if you can.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is very important. Sight lines are very important. If you're a patient in bed, then you're not viewing the piece of artwork at the height that you would be if you're walking down a corridor.
One thing that interested me in this research is the idea of pediatric art, because conventional mm-hmm. wisdom had it that kids wanted to see cartoon characters and things that they were maybe familiar with from day-to-day life, but it turns out they really appreciate nature scenes as well.
They do. There is something very universal about nature scenes. I think one of the mistakes we make frequently is to club all pediatric populations together. One, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old is very different from mm-hmm. a 15-year-old.
Sure.
It's interesting. I think in the UK, they don't even use the term adolescent. They use the term young adult
mm-hmm.
because they really are. They are young adults. So that is what makes pediatrics so challenging and so interesting, because you really have to find something that works for different ages, and every developmental stage really has a different mechanism. Also about the kiddie art, art created by children, that's what's interesting, because children love to see art that they have created, but not necessarily maybe art that somebody else of their age has created.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to keep in mind, because mm-hmm. we do tend to fill, especially dentists' offices again, with that kind of art. So that's one part of it. And then they grow out of it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing to think about. One very fascinating thing that we have learned in our studies with pediatrics is that children have immense attention to detail. So they can fixate on a very minute element in an artwork or an image that they're looking at. And that's where, when we select images, you try to make it bright and unambiguous and something that they can really connect to. And a lot of times, if you're putting art that is very Disney-like, mm-hmm. it has a very, very strong thematic connotation, which can get obsolete very quickly.
Yeah.
And they've grown out of it. And a kid is going to turn around and say, I'm too old for that. That's for babies.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do that even when they really are still a baby. So it's something to really think about. And with nature, what happens is, oftentimes, there are certain nature images that would work in acute care but would not work in pediatrics, and certain images that would work great in pediatrics and not in acute care. So there is a range. We do not want to paint them all in the same brush. But if you select something that has that level of interest in it, then a child can be engaged at different levels. A younger child can just find something interesting to look at. An older child can learn something from the image. So you engage them at different levels and realize that as they get older, they will react to the same picture in different ways. And you try to look for that kind of imagery.
We think instantly of teenagers, but I realize that this work is being done for a variety of different age groups. Research into virtual reality and how that might be used for patients in hospital settings.
That's something that it's a great question, because this is the digital age, and we worry that a lot of times kids are not even going to look up from their what is that they play?
The Game Boy, the PSP.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mine are still too young, but I'll find out soon enough. But yes, it's a huge challenge because they are used to technology. They take it for granted. And so if you're doing something with VR, it has to be immersive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the risk is that if it's very immersive, it has a huge amount of power on your psyche. So you can totally miscalculate it. I'll give you a great example. We've seen some plasma screens or digital displays that are huge, larger than life. And you will land up seeing faces sometimes on it. So think of a child who is barely 2.5 feet tall, walking by a digital display mm-hmm. of a face that is 20 feet tall.
That's scary.
That's scary. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, with digital art, we wish there was more information, but there isn't. Going back to your question about VR, I'll tell you where there is a whole lot of research which has been very effective, is pain. Mm-hmm. With pediatric patients, one of the biggest challenges is to distract them during painful procedures.
Yeah.
So if it's a procedure that's 1 or 2 minutes long, and you just want to distract them while they get an injection or get their blood drawn, it's 5 minutes, they work great. It is probably a bit of a stretch to extend that to a child who is in a patient room and is going to be looking at a wall or that space for hours and hours and hours on end. So VR has this quick impact, but what kind of a sustaining long-term impact it has is something that we need to very carefully consider. But we will have to, in this age, we definitely will have to think about it. Kathy?
Yes, I agree. It's a very exciting time, but we need a lot more research done at this point.
Before you can recommend it.
Absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone now to Sean in Dallas. Hi, Sean.
Oh, is this me?
Yeah, hi, Sean.
Sorry, I'm actually a physician that's practicing here in Dallas, and I just was listening to the topic, and I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm a general physician who go to the hospitalist, but I can totally see how our willingness to accept or would be effective. You know, the healing that we were looking for could be effective in a way, like prayer, healing, and art could be somehow related.
Yeah, Sean. Thank you so much for your call. Unfortunately, the signal was poor, so we weren't able to hear a lot of what he was saying, but he acknowledged that, yes, it could be something that could be useful. I wonder what both of you find. Is the staff, the on-the-floor staff, the doctors and the nurses and the folks who are doing procedures, are they the first ones to embrace the idea of upgrading the art and making sure that it really works for patients?
Actually, I think it's been sort of a long haul over the years, but... Honestly, some of the staff were the most skeptical, and it's taken a while. And, you know, it's not unusual for someone to ask or say, you know, basically, I'm not so sure we buy into this. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the research is really just sort of in its infancy. But there's such a growing body of material now and such an amount of interest that I think that we're going to see that research continue and continue to grow. But there are many skeptics out there, absolutely. Polly, do you want to add something to that?
I think the skepticism is a good thing. Mm-hmm. That means it keeps people interested, it keeps the dialogue going. So it's great because, and that's the best thing about art, it always generates discussion. And Parkland, I think, is a great example of where the staff, everybody on the team has been on board from day one. But what's also fascinating is that they've been on board with not just selecting the artwork, but also really investing in doing research around it. Mm. So it tells you something about, like, the point Kathy raised earlier, how much has changed from thinking about art as just icing on the cake and something that you could afford to take out in value engineering to an integral part of the environment and a big faith in the fact that it can really heal, it can really affect your bottom line.
So for a project like the New Parkland Hospital, which will be just vast and serve thousands and thousands of people, I would imagine the initial investment in filling it with great art is not an easy one to raise funds for. And I know there are community partnerships and different solutions around that. You don't have to speak specifically to Parkland if you don't want to, but how do hospitals approach the idea of coming up with the money to really make this work?
There are a couple of ways that hospital art programs are typically paid for, and they basically fall into two categories, one being either there is certain money in a construction budget, which is part of the whole overall funding of the construction program. That's one way. But then also a lot of hospitals, Parkland would be the perfect example, those funds are generously donated by citizens of the community. It may be very, very large gifts. It may be very small gifts. I've seen examples of where even unit staffs have gotten together to donate the funds to purchase maybe even just a couple of pieces of art. But there is a very strong desire to support the arts in healthcare, because I think that people are beginning to realize how important it is. It's important for the patients. It's important for the staff. And it also supports the local community and gives so much back to the artistic community. And what I think about is very interesting for Parkland with it being a public hospital. There will be many artists in this area who will use Parkland simply because so many artists cannot afford health insurance. So Parkland is a wonderful melting pot and incredible diversity of people with all sorts of levels of art education and art appreciation. So it's very important from Parkland's standpoint to make sure that that funding comes, but it will come. That second mode that, you know, we're seeing in funding today through the generous donations of various interested parties and lovers and supporters of both the arts and the institution itself.
So thinking back to hospitals that I have visited, there is often a spectacular piece in the lobby, which patients may never see. And then if there's artwork in the individual rooms, it's a print. Not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but I wonder if that's beginning to change and if there's more thought being given to sort of one-off individual works that may be done by local artists, maybe done by artists from elsewhere.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. 25, 30 years ago, when hospitals were just beginning to put art into their construction or renovation programs, the whole thought was, you're right, there's that big masterpiece in the lobby and then everything else. It's quite frankly a poster. And, you know, I've had so many owners say, I don't want to see the same posters that I see in my fast food restaurant. So there's been a real recognition. And most hospitals invest in sort of a tiered system where they may be that feature piece in the main public spaces, maybe a really beautiful monumental sculpture outside, and then it's tiered back, maybe works on paper in the principal corridors, then photography, then signed a number of pieces. So if anything, the trend I can see is posters really aren't the most desirable art form for hospitals anymore.
I want to read a couple of emails here. This one from Philomena. She writes, I was hospitalized at the University of Iowa with encephalitis. I felt lucky to be placed in an art therapy program while I recovered. This was a great, great experience for me, and I held on to it. It shaped the way I look at healing. Any comments about this and how you think the research might apply to other stressful places?
Art therapy is very interesting because it's a growing field. And how it's different in some part from what Kathy and I are talking about is we are talking more about the visual art program that becomes part of the fabric of the hospital, part of the environment.
Right.
So think of that as the environmental art, per se. Art therapy, on the other hand, are programs where you engage in creating art, and that's what helps you heal. And that is where It is very powerful. It is something that takes you out of the place that you're in mentally and transports you by engaging in it, by creating something. So very, very powerful. A lot of literature on it, a lot of literature, especially on music therapy, which has been very, very powerful again. The only challenge, once you think hospital-wide or think in terms of an entire environment, is that you don't have the kind of staffing that is needed to do a really intensive art therapy program. Not all your patients can have access to it. But every patient has needs to have access to the environment. So healing the environment through art is focusing more on the passive aspect of it to some extent, whereas art therapy programs are kind of the next stage where it involves active engagement. You need qualified therapists, and it really is a fascinating field, Kathy.
Chris, you know, there is a very interesting movement that's been going on for at least in some part for 20 years, which is it's not just visual arts for healthcare environments, but also performing arts. And there's a wonderful organization, if anyone is interested. It's called the Society for Arts in Healthcare, and it's been around over 25 years. And it supports and is an advocacy group for artists and art therapists, various people who are involved in the arts. One of the big movements in the healthcare is actually performing arts. There are artists at the bedside. Hmm. There are music performances that may be in the lobby. So there are all sorts of movements beyond the visual arts that are included as a part of sort of the mind-body, mm-hmm. whole-person treatment of patients and staff in hospitals today.
We're talking this hour with Kathy Hathorn, who is CEO and Creative Director of American Art Resources, and Upali Nanda, who is Director of Research at the organization. They're in town to participate in a North Texas Business Council for the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare that takes place this afternoon at the Winspear Opera House. You can find ticket information online at ntbca.org. We'll take more of your calls and emails after the break. The phone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a graduate education flexible enough to allow you to explore what matters most to you. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Upali Nanda, who is Director of Research for American Art Resources, and Kathy Hathorn, CEO and Creative Director of the organization. They're in town for a participation this afternoon at 5 in a North Texas Business Council for the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare at the Winspear Opera House. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we hear from Sarah in Dallas. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Well, I have actually lived in Children's Hospital in the past for about 6 months on and off, and I just want to say that the art there is just incredibly powerful and well thought out, and I love the way that that place comes together, and I think y'all have mentioned this. I think pediatrics is ahead in a lot of ways in that kind of just thinking through the whole environment. And so I just appreciate your efforts, and I just was thinking, as much as y'all have talked about patient care, I definitely, as a family member, really appreciated seeing especially those donations from former patients, like there were quilts on the walls from people who had been cared for there, or different things donated by patient families. And I think that idea of having local artists involved, especially people who might be patients at Parkland, I think that's so smart. It just makes you feel, or at least it made me feel less alone, that people had gone through this, real people, and they were still sort of present. So I just appreciate that.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call.
I think it's a great point that Sarah brought up about the power of art in weaving a narrative and telling a story and how you feel connected to other people. So that is true. That is something else that art is really, really effective in doing. Also, her point about the family members, I think it's true we sometimes undermine, but they are the ones who are going through the maximum amount of stress. Mm-hmm. The patients are medicated. Sometimes they're really out of it. But the family member is a patient almost, because they're going through that amount of stress and anxiety. And really, the art does have to speak to them.
So how will all this play out at Parkland? What is the plan for developing a strategy to put art into the hospital and ensuring that it is the best possible art for the patients that the hospital serves?
That's a great question. And it's one that Parkland has been working on for over a year now to not only develop an art program, but to lay a foundation for future opportunities to bring different art, new pieces, new artists into projects that may exist 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now. There is an art committee, a rather large art committee, made up primarily of Parkland individuals from various departments and practices throughout the institution. And they're the guiding body. And the art program is envisioned as one that will be highly diverse. It will be one that will draw from the community and speak to the community and really be a gift to the citizens of Dallas County. And there's a wonderful opportunity that I wanted to make everyone aware of. We are we're on the threshold. In fact, tomorrow is the big day. We are doing a call for artists. We are looking in particular for artists from the Dallas-Fort Worth, North Texas area to consider for the project. And let me give the listeners some information. If they would like to get the documents for the call for artists, they can send an email to parklandcallforartists@americanartresources.com. That's parklandcallforartists@americanartresources.com.
And so this is submissions. They'll send a photograph or send an essay or something?
How does that work? There are a variety of things that they basically send, but some images, some background information about themselves. So we can begin to consider this information. It will be put in front of the Parkland Art Committee, who is responsible for vetting all the submissions that come to us. And then it will be a process of seeing what we have received and where it would best fit throughout the hospital.
And Polly Parkland is also participating in some research about the effectiveness of art?
They are, which it really is such a cool project because they're spending so much time in selecting the right artwork, and then they're really, really, really going to test if it has an impact or not, which makes it really a leader in the field. Parkland is part of the Pebble Project, which is an initiative started by the Center for Health Design, which is another advocacy group for healthcare environments and evidence-based design. And Pebble is really an analogy because you're a pebble and you create ripples of awareness in the field, and that's exactly what Parkland is trying to do. And we actually are in the process of doing this fascinating, fascinating study which puts art and furniture together. We're doing it with the architects, which is HOK. We're partnering with them. And it's an existing Parkland right now. We will be doing the same study in New Parkland, but it's with the imaging environment. Hmm. And you know how stressful it is.
You're talking about MRIs and that sort of thing. Okay.
It's the MRI. So, and you know how stressful an MRI can get, getting into that magnet, having absolutely no control. But we have a very interesting hypothesis around it, that if you make the waiting experience prior to the MRI pleasant, a little better, then that will impact your experience of the imaging itself.
That's really interesting because I don't think anybody thinks about the waiting process. You think about what happens when you're in the tube. Mm-hmm.
True. And I think waiting is really that period where you get into that state of anxiety. You keep thinking and thinking and thinking more about it. And if you can calm the patient down before they get in, not only does it make it a more pleasurable experience, but we are trying to make a business case for it because we are trying to connect it to how many errors there are in the procedure, how much time it takes. Do you have to prematurely terminate the imaging process because the patient is so stressed? Mm-hmm. Do you have to give them more meds? Normally, you have to give them sedatives to calm them down. What if we can reduce the amount of sedation that a patient needs simply because they're calmer going in? And we're doing that right now with Parkland in a very strict, controlled experiment where we're studying the patients before they go in, and then after we put in some art and new furniture in these existing rooms. And then we'll have an opportunity of doing it again with the new Parkland Hospital. So it's the kind of study that really looks at the impact of art. It makes a great business case because you can translate it to staff time. You can translate it to actual tangible outcomes. It is a study that's looking at patients and visitors. So we're including the family members. Family members wait for almost up to an hour outside mm-hmm. while the patient is inside getting their scan done. So it's a great example of looking at doing a deep dive, really, to understand the mechanism of how you interact with the environment and with art in the environment and taking it all the way through in the design part of it, which Kathy is better equipped to speak about.
Well, you know, it's one of those scenarios where you're so happy to be at the place and time that you're in to see clients and owners like Parkland who are so desperately committed and so passionate about holistic care, treating the whole mind-body and really providing an environment that makes a huge difference. And it really goes beyond the business case. The business case is wonderful. But, you know, to make such a difference in the lives of people, I think our caller in who was a patient at Dallas Children's, you know, really spoke to that. It's a huge and emotional time in anyone's life, whether you're the patient or the family member. And it does make a lasting impression, either good or bad. So it's wonderful to see people committed to making such a positive difference.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Julio on the line in Dallas. Hi, Julio.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Well, you've touched a little bit upon this, and my question is, you know, we all know that art evokes many kinds of emotions, not just positive emotions. How will you guys determine what kind of art is going to be brought in, and will you be using art also that might evoke discomfort or other emotions that might not be so favorable to healing?
Thanks for your call.
That's a great question, and that goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning about the power of art and often the role of art to evoke an emotion. And I think that is why we invest so much in research, which if you think about it, it feels so distant from art. But if you have to be a geek, it's best to be a geek in researching art. this is why we are so careful, because he is absolutely right. You can invoke a reaction, positive or negative. And you look at the research. And what research really is trying to get a deep understanding of the stakeholder, of the patient, of the family member. That's what it is really trying to put yourself in the patient's shoes or the staff or the family member's shoes to understand what could have a positive impact. And that's where evidence-based art really comes from. His second point about whether you will really put art which is more evocative, we've had this question a lot of times about catharsis, mm-hmm. using art for catharsis, for getting that emotion out. That is something that is used very often in art therapy. You can do that. But if you want to do that, then you want to make sure that a qualified therapist is there to manage the repercussions of that. Mm-hmm. So it can be a powerful tool. But the more power you have, you realize that you have the power to harm and to heal. And that's where you want to make that very, very careful selection, because you do have that power, because art is a powerful thing. It's like the shortcut to your perception.
Let's go back to the phones once again. This time on the line, we have Mary in Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a research-related question as well. And while I can believe that art does have a positive impact, I can think of lots of things that would have a positive impact that the money can be spent on as well. So I'm wondering if you've done any research that's compared the potential positive effect of art to something like anything from music to meditation to flowers to making sure family can visit.
Thanks for a call.
Well, that's an interesting question, comparing the effect of art to other interventions. It's something that we can probably look at. But the fact is that in a healthcare environment, what the first step is, like Kathy pointed out, that evidence-based design is such a young field that we are still trying to figure out how all these different elements of the environment have an impact. And then you can actually go into comparing. So can you compare whether art has a greater impact than a comfortable bed, or whether it has an impact on a better impact than flooring? You run the risk of comparing apples to oranges.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to really stay away from that. Art has a great impact on perception. And so that's what you can compare. And of course, you can do a lot about comparing visual art, then seeing whether it makes a difference on having audiovisual. How many different modalities do you want to get together? How is immersion versus purely visual different? And that's Kathy's point that she made earlier on about performing arts and auditory arts and all of that. So it's like opening Pandora's box. I mean, this is why it's such a great area to be in right now, because we do have all those questions to answer. But the fundamental question is, what impact can one particular aspect have first? And then we can really start bundling them up and looking at different interventions together.
Kathy, do you find that healthcare facilities are eager to share whatever they've learned, successes and failures, with one another?
Yes. There are, I think in particular, there are conferences at the national level where you see many, many wonderful case studies that are presented. So, yes, you do see that.
And I would imagine that in other words, you don't want patients to see the same works or similar works throughout their day. You need to make sure that they're varied. Is that also a
Absolutely.
Consideration?
Absolutely. That is a very big emphasis in healthcare art programs. And it's not just the patients, because, you know, yes, you do have patients, especially certain types of patients who come back to the units frequently, but you also have staff members. So variety, diversity is a wonderful goal to have. And to me, that's what defines part of a successful healthcare art program.
Kathy Hathorn is CEO and Creative Director of American Art Resources. Upali Nanda is the organization's Director of Research. They're in town to participate in a North Texas Business Council for the Arts seminar on evidence-based art in healthcare this afternoon at 5 at the Winspear Opera House. Ticket information is available online at ntbca.org. Upali, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. And our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about Think, find out about upcoming programs, and download the daily podcast. It's free at kera.org/think. If you've got comments, questions, or suggestions, send those along to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.